Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Anna Mateo, John Russell, Barbara Klein, Jack Weitzel, and Tony Riggs. But first, this report. The road to higher education can be a long one, but few people have traveled as far as Dilafruz Dilia Samadova has. When Samadova was 21, she fled an arranged marriage in the Central Asian country of Tajikistan. Samadova was able to escape the marriage with help from friends as well as the United States Embassy. Her marriage ended in divorce. She secured an American work visa while seeking asylum. A group of Catholics in the American state of Ohio have helped Samadova rebuild her life. She began attending Walsh University in North Canton, Ohio. Samadova, who is now 30 years old, recently completed a bachelor's degree program in early childhood education. "The people I've met here, the people who've helped me, have become my family," she told the Canton Repository. Along with school, Samadova works two jobs. For one of her jobs, she works as a teaching assistant at Our Lady of Peace Catholic School in Canton, Ohio. She is also preparing for graduate school at Walsh University.
Samadova grew up in a Muslim household with strong rules, but she joined the Catholic religion after moving to Ohio in 2011. Her religion is among the reasons she says she could never return to her home country. "It's a very patriarchal country," she said of Tajikistan. "My mother, my four sisters, all live the same way, with no rights. My father didn't allow us to go to college, but I always wanted to go to school." Samadova said the marriage, which was arranged when she was 15, pushed her to flee. "I tried to live like my mom told me, but it got abusive physically and emotionally," she said. "I tried suicide. After that, I was scared to go back home. I guess God guided me. I don't know how I did everything." Samadova's native language is Farsi. She did not speak English when she arrived in the United States. Her first stop, New York City, brought culture shock. "I remember crying constantly, but people were so good," she said. "I had a dictionary, trying to communicate." When she first arrived in Ohio, Samadova worked as a hotel housekeeper. "The only English I knew was pillowcase, blanket, boss," she said. "I learned by myself. I bought an iPhone and listened to TV."
She soon took a second job cleaning a house for an Italian immigrant named Mamie Kolar. "She'd tell me about Jesus," Samadova said. "I didn't know anything about him. In Tajikistan, you're a Muslim or you're not." She was very loving. Samadova started joining Kolar at Catholic religious services. She studied the religion for 2 years before deciding to become a Catholic. Kolar died in 2013, but her son and daughter-in-law continued to help Samadova. They urged her to attend Terra State Community College in the Ohio town of Fremont. She completed a 2-year study program in early childhood education and saved enough money to buy her first car. Samadova said she had hopes of attending Bowling Green State University, but she did not meet the requirements to receive financial aid. At a religious service in Port Clinton, someone shared Samadova's story. Jerry Pellegrino, owner of Pellegrino's Music Center in Jackson Township, was in attendance. Pellegrino gave the priest his phone number with an offer to help Samadova attend Walsh University with support from the Pellegrino Family Endowed Scholarship. The Pellegrinos have long been supporters of Walsh. They were involved in bringing Mother Teresa to the school in 1982.
Samadova found the offer to help her hard to believe. "He offered to pay for my school. Who does that?" she said. "I called the priest and asked him, 'Is this guy real?' But her friends kept urging her to contact Pellegrino. So she did. She arrived at Walsh on a Sunday in 2017 and was in class that Monday. Samadova said she would like to work for an organization like the United Nations or Peace Corps in the future. She wants to help girls stay in school. She said she still has some contact with her 4 sisters, but communication with her parents is less common. They are still upset and angry about the divorce. Nobody ever does that. Nobody does that without permission," she said. "My sisters are happy for me, though they have the same lifestyle as my parents do now. My mother still wants me to come home. My father has disowned me, which I'm okay with because I understand the culture. I forgive him for that." Samadova's hope is to support other women facing such difficulties. "I know it's hard, but if you're trying, you will get it," she said. "I could have given up. I came here by myself. I have so many people who help me, more than my real family." I'm Dorothy Gundy.
And I'm Pete Musto.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind?
That is a song millions of Americans will hear this New Year's Eve. It is called Auld Lang Syne. It is the traditional music played during the New Year's celebration. Scottish singer-songwriter Douglas MacLean opened our show with his version of the song. Auld Lang Syne is an old Scottish poem. It tells about the need to remember old friends. The words Auld Lang Syne mean old long since. No one knows who wrote the poem first. However, a version by Scottish poet Robert Burns was published in 1796. The words and music we know today first appeared in a songbook 3 years later. This song is sung in the United States mainly on New Year's Eve. Here is another version by the Scottish group, The Cast, as we end this Words in Their Stories with their version of Auld Lang Syne. I would like to wish all of our listening friends a very happy new year. I'm Anna Mateo.
What is the best form of exercise for older adults who are dieting? Doctors do not yet know the answer, but one study suggests that elderly dieters may be able to protect against bone thinning by doing resistance exercise. Medical experts often use body mass index, or BMI, to measure obesity, the condition of being very overweight. BMI compares a person's height and weight. A BMI of around 30 or higher is considered obese. Worldwide, the number of obese people has nearly tripled since 1975, notes the World Health Organization. Obesity problems among older adults are difficult to deal with. This is because weight loss efforts can create health problems, such as an increased risk of bone thinning. Thin bones are more likely to fracture, the study team noted. Their findings appeared in the Journal of Bone and Mineral Research. For the study, researchers randomly put 141 obese adults into one of four groups. The first group had dieters who did only aerobic exercise. The second group had dieters who only did resistance exercise. The third had dieters who did both forms of exercise. The final group, the control group, did not exercise or change their diet. The subjects met with dietitians and did supervised workouts over 26 weeks. The control group went to some classes to educate them about healthy eating. All of the subjects in the study had a BMI of 30 or greater. The average age was 70 years old. In the exercise groups, subjects were given custom diets that created a deficit of about 500 to 750 calories a day. They also did supervised one-hour workouts three times a week. The aerobic exercises included walking on an exercise machine, riding a stationary bicycle, and stair climbing. Resistance exercises included upper and lower body exercises using weight machines. All of the exercisers also did some activities designed to improve balance and flexibility. People in all three diet groups lost about 9% of their body weight during the study. Members of the control group lost about 1% of their body weight. At the end of the study, all of the participants had a decrease in bone density. But bone density decreased less in the older adults who did resistance exercise. Bone density also decreased less in those who did resistance exercise and aerobic workouts. Dr. Dennis Villarreal was the lead writer of a report on the study. When undergoing weight loss therapy, he said, elderly patients should use some resistance exercise to protect against bone loss. Resistance exercise should be at least moderate in intensity, Villarreal added in an email. We do not know if less intense exercise would be effective in protecting against bone loss during weight loss. Villarreal is with the Baylor College of Medicine and the Michael E. DeBakey VA Medical Center in Houston, Texas. One limitation of the study is that researchers only followed the subjects for about 6 months. That length of time is too brief to confirm whether one type of exercise might be better than another for fall or bone fracture prevention, the report said. Cynthia Brown is a doctor with the Integrative Center for Aging Research at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Based on this study, one would conclude that for an older adult who is obese and trying to lose weight, the combination of aerobic and resistance exercise will help the most to maintain their bone mineral density and their general physical fitness, she said by email. Older adults who are able should do muscle strengthening exercises at least twice a week. Brown was not involved in the study. I'm John Russell.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. President Ulysses Grant served 2 terms in office. His administration was marked by corruption. The president himself was not linked directly to any of the incidents, but he was friends with dishonest members of the cabinet and Congress. Jack Weitzel and Tony Riggs tell how Grant's problems affected the Republican Party in the presidential election of 1876.
The American people were very disappointed with President Grant. He was the military hero of the Civil War. He had led the Union Army of the North to victory over the Confederate Army of the South. His popularity dropped, however, during his presidency. Grant was not an effective political leader, nor was he able to control the men around him. The American people also were worried about the nation's economic situation. A serious depression had begun during Grant's second term. Many people were out of work. They blamed the ruling Republican Party.
The state and congressional elections of 1874 were an important turning point. Republicans were shocked by the results. For the first time in 18 years, the Democratic Party won control of the House of Representatives. They won 169 seats. The Republicans won 109. Democrats also won control of 23 of the 35 state governments. These included several northern states where people were tired of Republican rule.
Important changes also were made in the South. Democrats won control of southern state governments from radical Republicans. One of these states was Mississippi. White Democrats there began organizing groups called White Leagues. These groups wanted to prevent blacks from voting for radical Republicans. They started riots in which many blacks were killed. They also used economic power against blacks. These efforts succeeded. Most blacks were too afraid to vote. The Democrats took control of both the Mississippi legislature and the governor's office. Similar actions with similar results took place in other southern states.
As Grant's second term came to an end, he began to talk about the possibility of another 4 years in the White House. Republican politicians were firmly opposed. They blamed Grant for the party's defeats in state and congressional elections. Grant had to give up any hope of a third term. Congressman James Blaine seemed to have the best chance of winning the Republican presidential nomination in 1876. Blaine had been Speaker of the House of Representatives when the Republicans controlled Congress. He was powerful, and he had many supporters. Some Republican leaders, however, questioned his honesty. Blaine fought this criticism with an emotional speech in Congress.
When the Republican Party convention opened in Cincinnati, Ohio, Blaine was the leading candidate for the presidential nomination. He expected to win the first day. There was a wild demonstration of support when his name was put before the convention. But before the voting could begin, the lights went out. Some delegates believed Blaine's opponents were responsible. These opponents worked all night to get other delegates to change their support from Blaine to another candidate. When the delegates voted the next morning, Blaine did not have enough votes to win the nomination.
However, after six ballots, Blaine appeared ready to win. To stop him, his opponents needed to unite behind another candidate. One of these candidates was Rutherford Hayes, the governor of Ohio. Hayes had fewer enemies than the other candidates, so he became the compromise candidate for delegates hoping to stop Blaine. On the seventh ballot of the convention, Rutherford Hayes captured the Republican nomination.
The Democratic Party met in St. Louis, Missouri. Delegates nominated Samuel Tilden, the governor of New York. Tilden had led the fight to end dishonesty in government in New York State. He had ousted a group called the Tweed Ring, which controlled New York City politics for years. Democrats said he was the man to end dishonesty in government in Washington. Republicans campaigned by denouncing the Democratic Party. They called it the party of Southern rebellion and treason. Instead, they said, vote for the Republican Party, the party that had saved the Union. Democrats campaigned by attacking Republican dishonesty. They blamed Republicans for the nation's economic problems, and they promised better times for everyone if their candidate was elected.
The presidential election of 1876 was very close. By midnight of Election Day, the results seemed to show that Democrat Samuel Tilden was the winner. Republican Rutherford Hayes went to bed believing he had lost. However, the Republicans quickly saw that the electoral votes of three southern states could decide the winner. In the American presidential system, whoever wins the most popular votes in a state usually gets all the electoral votes of that state. In 1876, the electoral votes of three states, Florida, Louisiana, and South Carolina, were enough to give the White House to one candidate or the other.
Each party claimed victory in these three states. Each accused the other of stealing votes and counting ballots unfairly. Finally, the two parties agreed to form an electoral committee to decide who had won the disputed votes. The committee was supposed to include seven Republicans, seven Democrats, and one independent. But before it could meet, the independent member resigned. A Republican took his place. The Republicans had a majority.
The committee first debated the disputed votes of Florida. After much discussion, the eight Republicans on the committee voted to accept the votes of Florida's Republican electors. They rejected a proposal to investigate the way the votes were counted in the state. They said there was not enough time for a full investigation. The same thing happened with the disputed votes of Louisiana and South Carolina. The Republicans on the committee voted to count the Republican electors. The Democrats voted to count the Democratic electors. In each case, the Republicans won by a vote of 8-7.
As a result, Rutherford Hayes gained the electoral votes of all three states. This gave him enough to win the election. Democrats were furious. Democrats in many states began organizing party militia groups. They said they would fight, if necessary, to prevent the Republicans from stealing the presidency. The situation seemed very tense and dangerous. Many feared the start of another civil war. Negotiations finally provided a peaceful solution.
Representatives of the two parties met secretly to work out a compromise. The Democrats agreed to permit Republican Rutherford Hayes to be sworn in as president. In return, Hayes agreed to end federal support of radical Republican governments in the South. He promised to name Southerners to his cabinet and other important jobs. And he said he would provide more federal aid for schools and railroads in the South. As part of the agreement, Hayes promised not to act aggressively to support the civil rights of black Southerners.
Hayes' opponent, Democrat Samuel Tilden, did not oppose the agreement. Tilden was an old man. His health was poor. He agreed that 4 years of Rutherford Hayes would be better than 4 years of civil war. So it was that Rutherford Hayes became the 19th president of the United States.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.